How the net devalues creative work, or why you probably won't make a living as a freelance journalist. Hello, I'm Marianne Johansson. I'm a freelance film, TV, and pop culture critic, and I run the website flickphilosopher.com. Slide. Flick Philosopher has been online since 1997, which means it's one of the oldest, longest-running movie websites on the web, and it's one of the most popular independent sites online. I run the site completely on my own. There is no corporate backing. I don't have a staff. The subject matter, the content, is not academic. I cover a lot of first-run movies and films on DVD with a light touch, although I do strive to be thought-provoking in my reviews. There's also a lot of silly stuff on the site, like lots of coverage of Doctor Who. It's one of my favorite shows, and I get a lot of traffic, actually, by writing about Doctor Who. The site gets about 100,000 unique readers per month, and that's about 750,000 uniques over the course of the past year. Now, the metrics aren't precisely analogous to print, but that's similar to the readership of, slide, Top of the Pops magazine, which is a teen-oriented magazine in the UK. And it's also about the same as, slide, British GQ. A key difference between a publication like Top of the Pops or GQ when compared with mine is, as I said, my site is a one-woman show. I do everything. Now, the kind of audience that I'm getting online, about 100,000 readers a month, is enough, obviously, to support a publication like GQ with a large staff. And it's also the kind of readership that you might expect from the newspaper in a medium-sized city. And in print, that kind of readership can still support a publication with a staff. Unfortunately, on the web, it's not enough. And the reason for that is online advertising pays so little that it's almost impossible to bring in the amount of money that a comparable print publication could. During my best month of advertising, I brought in, slide, about $300. That's about, slide, £180 a month. Now, that $300 or £180 per month is before expenses, of course. I spend about $100 a month on things like web hosting, domain registrations, and other expenses directly connected to running the site. Now, this amount of money might be enough, might just about be acceptable for a day's work, for the kind of work that I do, which is more than full-time in the amount of time that it requires. And, of course, it is skilled professional work. I'm a professional writer. So why is it so little? This is why. Slide. I got an email recently from the entertainment editor at Forbes.com. Forbes is the online version of the business magazine, and I was actually surprised to learn that they have an entertainment section, but they do, and the editor assured me that Forbes loves it so much that they are looking to expand it. The editor told me that she loves my writing, having seen it at flickphilosopher.com, and would be delighted if I came and did some work for her, contributed some content to Forbes.com. For all of this, she wanted to pay me exactly nothing. There was no pay involved whatsoever for a professional film critic. Now, this is the way that it is on much of the web these days. There are sites all over the place run by big corporations that are making enormous profits, and part of the way they're making those profits is because they are not paying their writers. Slide. It's this woman's fault. This is Arianna Huffington. She runs the Huffington Post. And, okay, maybe it's not entirely her fault, but she epitomizes everything that is wrong with the net today. Slide. Huffington Post does have a small staff of editors, but it does not pay its writers. Many of the writers whose work appears on Huffington Post, both in the U.S. and the U.K., are Huffington's celebrity friends, people like Nora Ephron, Norma Lear. There are all sorts of politicians and pop stars and actors and Hollywood types who can afford to work for free because they're not looking to get paid for their writing. They're just looking to have a little soapbox to spout off on whatever their issue of the day is. Non-celebs are writing for exposure, but of course they don't even need the exposure. They're famous anyway. Unfortunately, Huffington has also roped in thousands upon thousands of bloggers, non-professional writers, who are happy to donate their work to the site in exchange for absolutely nothing beyond the potential to get some exposure. But of course, people will seek out the writings of a famous rock star or a politician. They're not going to be seeking out the writing of someone whose work is unknown. Slide.
And this has been very successful for Huffington Post. Reuters has reported that in August of 2011, Huffington Post surpassed 1 billion page views for the first time and recorded 37 million unique visitors, as well as more than 5 million comments. This makes Huffington Post one of the top 100 sites on the entire web, and this is why AOL recently paid $315 million for Huffington Post. Most of this money, of course, went directly to Arianna Huffington. None of it went to the writers who have made the site the success that it is.
Slide. Why are so many people willing to give the fruits of their creative labor away to people like Arianna Huffington? She thinks she knows the reason. She's been quoted as saying that self-expression has become the new entertainment. Creative work, not just writing, but graphic design, music, comics, fine art, anything that can be digitized and uploaded onto the internet and easily shared, has been redefined by the people in power, the people with money, as supposedly nothing more than self-amusement. Arianna Huffington really, in so many words, hopes that we will all be happy to masturbate online while people watch and while people pay her and people like her. Now, there is a word for that. Slide. Pimp. Now, this guy does share some of the money that he makes with the people who actually do the work for him. We know how this guy makes his money. How does Arianna Huffington get rich pimping out writers? Slide. The concept of the long tail has been around for decades, but it was popularized in recent years by Chris Anderson of Wired Magazine, who used it to describe how traffic works on the web and how the attention of web surfers is divided. The long tail describes the web on the whole in that there are a few very popular sites, such as Facebook, Google, eBay, and so on, that get the bulk of the traffic online, and then there are millions upon millions of less popular sites that divide up the remaining bits of traffic that are available. It describes how sites such as Amazon makes its money. Amazon will make a fortune selling 10 bazillion copies of the latest Adam Sandler movie on DVD or the latest Twilight novel in paperback. And then it makes even more money selling a few copies here and there of a million other products. It describes how my own site can look at its own traffic. I have a few pages on my site that get the bulk of the traffic, and then there are thousands and thousands of other pages that get a few hits here and there, and it all adds up. It also describes how traffic and subsequent ad revenue on a site like Huffington Post works. Arianna Huffington's celebrity blogger friends get the bulk of the traffic on the site, and that's good. But then there are thousands upon thousands of other bloggers contributing millions upon millions of pages that maybe only the blogger's best friend and mother ever sees. But that adds up to a lot of traffic. Slide. You may have heard of content farms. These are sites like eHow, and what they do is they rope in thousands and thousands of writers, and they may actually pay them £5 or £10 or $5 or $10 for a post to create lots and lots of content. And it's lots and lots of content that is heavy on keywords that search engines like. So here's a page from eHow, and it's called How to Know When You Love Someone. It doesn't even make any sense to me. This is how it begins. We've all seen Bambi and a number of other shows where hearts beat quickly and minds stop working. They seem so in love, and all the cares in the world can't seem to dissuade them from seeing, thinking, or feeling anything else. This is the beginning of love, but love is fleeting without the next step. Now, I have no idea who would require instructions on how to know when they're in love, and even if someone did require instructions, this doesn't tell you anything because it's completely incoherent. But it doesn't matter because this page is guaranteed to draw search engine traffic when someone searches on Bambi, or love, or how to know if you're in love, or falling in love, or all sorts of things that people goof around with search engines to look for.
Slide.
This eHow article even comes with a list of instructions, which is really quite hilarious, if unintentionally so. I love that the difficulty level is easy, so it's not too hard to figure out how you're in, if you're in love. Slide. This is a page from WikiHow, which is another content farm. And it tells you instructions on how to stand on a soccer ball, which is a skill that I don't think anybody ever needs. But again, this will capture search engine traffic when someone searches on soccer or football, which is one of the most popular sports in the world. This is clearly designed to bring in traffic. And it doesn't matter then when, as far as advertising revenue is concerned, if when someone clicks on this page who's looking for information about soccer or football or where to buy a soccer ball, if they instantly determine that this site is not useful for them. Because even if they click away 10 seconds later, they have already registered an ad impression, so WikiHow will make money off this page. Now, it's true there are some sites online, sites like Wikipedia, that do rope people into writing for free and do make money off of advertising revenue. But it's a little bit more forgivable what they're doing because they are aiming to be informative. They are doing things that they're using the power of crowdsourcing to create something that could not possibly be done otherwise or at very extreme expense. But content farms exist only to make money. And what's worse, because they have figured out a way to cheat the search engines, they are making it much harder for any site that crafts real content, informative content, amusing content, entertaining content. It makes it much harder for sites like that to compete. Handcrafted content cannot compete with the content farm. Now, in February of this year, Google refined its algorithm in order to make it a little harder for content farms to take advantage of search engine optimization. Some of those sites did take a hit in traffic and hence a hit in ad revenue, but they're still getting millions and millions of page views per day. Some of these content farms actually saw their site, their traffic go up. So the long tail is still working very much to their benefit. If you're a little site and you're stuck in the long tail probably looks like this to you. Slide. Now, I mentioned earlier that in my best month, as far as advertising was concerned, I made around $300 for the month. I no longer have ads on my site, actually, because what they were bringing in was so little compared to how they overwhelmed the site and made for a less pleasant experience for the viewer, but also because it was misleading my readers into thinking that I was making a ton of money off the site. Everyone knows popular sites make money off of ad revenue. My site is popular, and it seemed to be popular by readers, especially since in the past year I've had issues with things like server overloads and bandwidth problems that are obviously reflected in the user experience. So people thought the site was popular, and it is, and it's festooned with ads, so it must be taking tons of money. Now, there's popular, and there's popular. Slide. By most measures of success, apart from financial ones, flickphilosopher.com does pretty well on the web. There's a service called Alexa, which ranks sites online by their relative ranking. So you can't see page views, but you can see the relative popularity of websites. So the site with the number one Alexa traffic ranking is probably Google or Facebook, and that would represent the most popular site on the web, the site getting the most traffic. FlickPhilosopher.com currently has an Alexa ranking in the 120,000s, and this is out of more than 25 million sites that Alexa is ranking. Now, that's not bad at all. That's especially for a site that is created just by one person. That's something really to be proud of, and I am. Slide. If we look at Alexa's rankings by category, my site falls into the movie review category, and there it's number 14, which means, as according to Alexa, Flick Philosopher is the 14th most popular movie review site on the web. And when we look at the other sites surrounding mine, they're all sites that are owned by corporations that have big money behind them, that are really doing quite well and have lots of resources behind them. So, geez, I'm doing great. Except that I do work full-time hours on the site, and I'm not making anywhere near a living at it, and that's not something that's sustainable. But if I decided that I wanted to perhaps go and find some corporate work in the field that I'm in anything related to media or journalism, that would be really tough to do because, since the beginning of the millennium in 2000, the entire advertising and media industry has lost about 20% of the jobs it had at the turn of the century. Now, basically what this means is the net is killing media as a business. Spider-Man's J. Jonah Jameson may have been the guru of our age when he told Peter Parker, "No jobs, freelance." There aren't any jobs, you've got to freelance. Except, as we've just seen, the sites that might pay you for your work, that expect professional levels of work, aren't paying, or they're paying slave wages for incoherent content like the content farms are. You also might be competing against teenagers who can write for free in their after-school hours, I presume. Huffington Post and Patch, which is an AOL site, is recruiting bloggers as young as 13 years old. And there are obviously some legal issues involved with this that may eventually put the quash on this idea, but that remains to be seen. And of course, the 13-year-olds aren't being paid either. You are also up against, computer-generated stories, which some sites are using to save money on writers. And again, this comes back to search engine optimization, which is the most important issue as far as dragging in traffic and then boosting ad revenue. So stories don't have to be coherent. They don't even have to be written by people anymore, as long as they're stuffed with keywords. You're also competing with people like me. I've been online with Flick Philosopher since 1997, which in net terms means I'm dating from the era of digital cave paintings. I've had nearly a decade and a half online to build my reputation, to build my audience, to create my own long tail of content. And if you're coming fresh online now, especially if you're coming into a field that's already very crowded, like film reviews, you've got a real uphill battle to climb. Of course, it's not impossible to make money online with creative content. You may be the person who comes up with the next funny cat pictures thing, the next cool thing online that no one has yet thought of. In 2010, the iCanHasCheeseburger.com site generated seven figures in income from advertising and licensing fees and merchandise sales. So it's possible. I don't want to put you off. Some people do very well giving away the fruits of their creative endeavors online. Cory Doctorow, the science fiction novelist, gives away his books in ebook form, and this does help drive sales. Of course, he has other online endeavors, like the blog Boing Boing, that have helped build his reputation. So he has spent a lot of time and effort creating the audience that was there to buy the things that he's selling. So that is one option for a way to make money online, which is to spend a lot of time and a lot of effort creating free content, a free blog or a free ebook, and hoping that that drives sales. That can help. You build a reputation, you build an audience, you build a core of people who want to hear from you. Comic artist Randall Monroe, who creates the webcomic XKCD, has earned enough to support himself and a few employees by selling merchandise, T-shirts and such. I'm bringing in some money through voluntary subscriptions. It remains to be seen whether that can work on a larger scale, but I am hopeful. But you are always competing against other websites and other endeavors online for eyeballs. And I want to tell you a little story that has changed the way that I look at the web. A few years ago in China, in 2008, there was an earthquake. It was enormous. It made the news in the Western world. And I remember seeing TV news footage of from a city on the edge of the earthquake zone that was not badly damaged during the quake, but shook up people enough and shook buildings enough so that people were evacuating. It was a sort of footage where you see people pouring into the street, office workers and apartment dwellers, and there's that little bit of excitement that comes from the building shaking and you get a free break from work. And it turned out that this was the city of Chengdu, which I had never heard of before. And it has 14 million people in the metropolitan area. And I remember when I heard about Chengdu and how huge it was and how I had never heard of it before. And this just completely blew my mind. This was like discovering a New York City or London or Tokyo or Mexico City that I had never even heard of before. And it changed my opinion of the world and how much I thought I knew about it. And it's also applicable to the web. Because I am doing all of my own marketing and promotion for my website, I spend a lot of time searching out competitors to see what they're doing, to see how they're handling the same sort of work that I'm doing. And I am constantly coming across sites that have more traffic than I do based on their Alexa rankings that I've never heard of before. And this is astonishing, and it's also a little terrifying, because when you're trying to compete online, you, of course, always have in mind the competitors that you know about, but always lurking out there are the other competitors that you don't know about, and some of these are going to be the Chengdu of the web, huge sites with huge audiences doing things very well that you've never even heard of before. So those are the ones you have to look out for, but, of course, you can't predict where they are or who they're going to be. And on that note, I leave you, and I don't wish to be overly negative on the web. The web is an amazing thing that has given everybody the opportunity to do their own thing in a way that we never could have done before when corporations did hold all the keys of access to an audience. So I wish you good luck.